All right, welcome back, everyone. It's a quick turnaround time from the last podcast to this one. We got to get them all in, and I got to leave time for like an hour and a half or 2 hour Mariners preview episode, because boy, there's just a lot to cover for that unserious baseball team before the season starts. But that's not what we're doing today. We got two more divisions today, the NL West, and the last division that we'll preview that should be coming out this Friday is the AL East. Still kind of waiting for some particular free agents to land, and I feel like the NL East is a fairly likely place for them to go, although this division they could also go, but I saved these two for last. The Giants did finally do something for me, so thankfully I waited so I could talk about them with the addition of Matt Chapman. Will the Padres add Blake Snell back to their rotation? I doubt it. I don't know. I feel like the Dodgers are done. I just see those two pitchers probably likely going to the AL East, maybe, you know? Red Sox? Perhaps. Yankees? Perhaps. It just seems most likely, so I'm going to save that one for last. But without further ado, I don't want to waste time. I want to get into it. I want to start talking about the Colorado Rockies, the projected last place team in this division, the Colorado Rockies. And boy, it's bleak over there in Denver. They went 59-103 last year. Their Pythagorean was 60-102, so kind of right on the money there. Their farm system is 24th ranked. You'd think after being consistently bad for so many years, they would have better prospects either in their system or in the minor leagues. Or not, ugh, that was the same thing, in the minor leagues or at the major league level, and they just simply don't. They have some interesting prospects, none that I think are particularly groundbreaking. I think they have some like interesting pitching prospects, at least, that I don't feel like they've had the past couple years, and their top prospect is a 20-year-old shortstop named Adeil Amador, and I think he's pretty far off from the major league level. So I don't even think I'll be talking about prospects for them this year. Like, I want to see Gabe Hughes at the major league level soon, not on the Rockies. Go Zags for Gabe Hughes. I watched him pitch at Gonzaga a few times. Absolute dog. I hope he gets traded out of the system, because I don't want to see him pitch in Coors for his career. I really don't. Send them to the Guardians or the Mariners or something. Somewhere where they can develop pitching. But boy, the Rockies are bad. I'm just going to say that. They're projected by Pecota to go 58-104. Fangraphs is a little bit kinder, 63-99. Pecota with a 0% chance to make the playoffs. And Fangraphs has given them a nice, generous 0.1% to make the playoffs. So Fangraphs doesn't think it's completely impossible that they sneak into the playoffs this year, while Pecota says no. No playoffs for you. And I'm going to keep this really short and sweet, because the other four teams are way more interesting to talk about, especially in the context of like what's going to happen this year with this division. I don't even know exactly who the X factor for this team is, because I don't think the ceiling is high, and I don't think the floor is... Like, I think the floor is where they're projected. I just don't really see much else happening for them. But their lineup is Charlie Blackman. He's still on this team at DH. Chris Bryant at first base. Nolan Jones in left field. Brendan Rodgers at second base. Ryan McMahon at third base. Elias Diaz at catcher. The 2023 All-Star Game MVP, Elias Diaz, I should say. Sean Bouchard is in right field, Ezekiel Tovar at shortstop, and Brenton Doyle in center field. I guess the X factor for this team, I think it's just Chris Bryant. I mean, he hasn't managed to hit that well at Coors, which is surprising, and it's still so surreal to me that he is on this team and not on a better team, because I think he'd still be useful on a contending team. But he's on the Rockies. He got a bag, went to play for the Rockies, and we all forgot about him. And he hasn't really been particularly spectacular for the Rockies hitting in Coors. So, I mean, if he's just like all of a sudden at age 32 back to 25-year-old peak 7 WAR MVP Chris Bryant at Coors. That would certainly increase their win total. But then like Charlie Blackman at 38 years old or however old he is, not super moved by him. I still think he can get on base pretty well. Nolan Jones is the guy to watch on this team if you find yourself wanting to watch the Rockies at any point this year. Nolan Jones is that dude you're going to want to watch. Outfielder, really had a nice year last year, broke out in a big way at the plate. I think he is a bat that will continue to hit really well in Coors. I think he has up to 70 grade raw power, and he showed a good amount of game power last year. He had 20 home runs in 106 games. Struck out a decent amount, just a pretty clear like 3 true outcome guy to me who can play okay defense in the corners. Just had a really good season at the plate last year as a rookie. He came up in 22 but only played a month full of games. If there's anyone on this team that you should watch, like Nolan Jones is a good watch, I would say. That's about it. Like Brandon Rogers, I'm intrigued to see what he looks like after being hurt. He was a top prospect at one point, want to say 4 or 5 years ago at this point, I think 5, 6 years ago even. And he's just been marred with injury his entire MLB career so far. And even when he's not been hurt, it hasn't looked particularly good at the plate. Ryan McMahon can really get into something. He's slotted at third base here. I think he's likely his best position is first, but he offers some dinger power, he's really not like a bad hitter. I don't know like what their plan with him is, because I think this is his last year. No, they extended him to 2027. Just they do bizarre things over there in this organization. But like his raw numbers look pretty good when you just look at him, but then you look at like the park adjusted numbers and he's not, it's like below league average, his park adjusted. Elias Diaz is a player. Ezekiel Tovar can play a good shortstop. Brenton Doyle might be the best center fielder in the league right now. I think he won a gold glove last year. Elite center field defense, not much at the plate at all. And then you get into the pitching, and it's just like Kyle Freeland, Cal Quantrill, Austin Gomer, Ryan Feltner, Dakota Hudson. That's the rotation. If that's not doing anything for you, we have that in common. And then the bullpen, they have Justin Lawrence, who is the one guy you should know who will be closing out games for them this year. I don't necessarily think Justin Lawrence is bad. He just pitches in Coors. The rest of the bullpen, you might know Jalen Beeks, Nick Mears, Ty Block, they brought back from last year, non-roster invite, Tyler Kinlaw. Like Justin Lawrence is really like the only guy I think is actually a good pitcher, and he had a pretty good year last year in this bullpen. And really that's the Rockies. I'm not going to spend much more time talking about this Rockies team. Like Chris Bryant, I guess could have a year. I don't really care too much. Nolan Jones. Nolan Jones is that guy to watch. I like Nolan Jones. I think Nolan Jones is good. This team is going to be real bad again with no real direction. Like it's one thing to play in Coors, and you should definitely be able to build a good lineup in Coors. And I don't think this lineup is like awful. I think they'll score a decent amount of runs just by virtue of there's some good bats and they play in Coors. But there's never really been a direction for them on the pitching staff. And it's a tough ask to build a good pitching staff in Coors, but it helps if you get good pitchers at least. And like all of those pitchers I named to you on most other teams wouldn't be in the top half of their rotation at all. On any contending team, all 5 of these guys would be like 4 or 5 starters. Like it helps to get good pitchers at the very least, because while they're still going to pitch in Coors half the time, at least they're going to be good elsewhere. And even these pitchers are not great in other ballparks. So I don't know. The Rockies are so behind. I feel like they're the most behind the times right now in terms of like player acquisition, internal scouting, internal improvements. I think they're trying to do stuff, but I feel like they're now trying to set up like analytics departments and pitching lab and stuff. I think but it just feels like it's about a decade too late for them to start trying to do that. Not that they shouldn't do that. This is just kind of a aimless organization. And you should at the very least be able to build a team in Coors that's fun. If your pitching staff's going to be bad, I want the offense to be a top five run producing offense in the league at the very least. I want high scoring games in Coors. It's not even that they're lacking good revenue. Like they're in a fine media market if you want to start talking business. And there's so many people that go to the games compared to other teams who are this bad because Coors is just a good time. People like to go to Coors and drink beer and watch baseball in pretty good weather in the summer in Denver. They get pretty good crowds for how bad they are. Like, there's really not an excuse for how bad this team has been. They do play in a tough division, but they should be better than this, especially internally. They should have a lot better young players at the big league level than they do right now. Like, they have Nolan Jones, and that's about it for me. I don't especially believe in Ezekiel Tovar long term. Maybe he adds some stuff offensively. Brendan Rodgers, I just want to see it. I just want to see him play a full healthy season to really form an opinion. I don't think Elias Diaz is a bad catcher by any stretch. I feel like he made improvements to his game last year, but it's also the guy's like 33 now, and what more are you going to expect from him? Probably not much at all. It's just bad all the way around, and I'm not going to stick with talking about this team. I'm just going to move on. Their over-under win total is 60.5, and I'm just going to safely take the under on the 60.5 and move on to talking about a much more interesting team. The next three teams, similar to the NL East, they're all separated by only a couple wins based on these projections, and I see why. There's a good reason why, but this team is projected to get fourth place by a very narrow margin in this division, and it's the San Diego Padres. The San Diego Padres, fascinating season last year, one of the more ridiculous baseball seasons that I've seen in my lifetime. Everyone knew that they were better than they were last year. And for the majority of the season, they were bad. And then they pulled it together at the end of the year when 82-80 almost made the playoffs. Damn near. They were so close. And they fall just short. Like, if in the first couple months of the season they get a little bit luckier, I think this team ends up making the wild card. And the Diamondbacks made the wild card as an 84-win team. Padres win 85 games. Could they go to the World Series and win it? Sure, it's baseball. But that's how the cookie crumbles. They instead go 82-80. They miss out on the playoffs. And you look at their Pythagorean record, and it is 92-70. 10-win difference, which just shows you how truly unlucky this team was last year. And it's brutal. And they had a very... I don't know if I want to say topsy-turvy offseason. They had what felt like an expected offseason. Free agency-wise, they signed three relievers. They signed Wandy Peralta, and then they signed Yuki Matsui and Woo Suk-yo out of Japan and Korea, respectively. And those were two of the better relief options available on the market. I think Woo Suk-yo, I don't know exactly what to make of him. He was a way cheaper deal coming out of the KBO. But Yuki Matsui was maybe, besides Josh Hader, the best reliever available in this free agency class. I don't know if that's a crazy thing to say, because I guess there was Bob Steeve and like Joe Jimenez and Ronaldo Lopez, and I don't know. I think Yuki Matsui was definitely a top five reliever in this class. I think a lot of people like what he's going to offer this San Diego Padres team, and I think they kind of needed to bulk out their bullpen. Even if they still had Hader, which they do not anymore, I still think they needed to make those signings, and they did. I think Yuki Matsui is going to be real good. He's a pitcher from Japan who throws three good pitches, and his best pitch is a splitter, not surprisingly. And I think he's going to be good. I think we saw him in the WBC. I think he's going to be a very solid option for them in relief. Maybe close out games for them, because I don't think they have a closer. Technically, Robert Suarez right now is pegged to close games for them. But if Yuki Matsui is just that dude immediately, I think he might see a lot of closing opportunities this year. And then, of course, they traded away Juan Soto. And that's why I can't give them a good offseason grade, because no matter what, if it was needed, if it was not needed, they probably absolutely needed to do that for cash flow purposes, it sounded like. But I don't really care the circumstances. If you trade Juan Soto away from your baseball team, it's a loss. It's a net loss. It always is. I don't really care who you get back. And they got back a bunch of what they needed. Like I think this trade was something they needed, but it was a losing battle going in. But they got back a bunch of players from that deal. They got back. Oh, they also traded Trent Grisham, which I think was huge for the Yankees. But I'll get into that in their preview. They got back Kal Higashioka, catcher, really solid backup defensive catcher option. Michael King, who will be one of their better starting pitchers this year, probably. Converted from a relief pitcher. I really like Michael King. And then three more starters slash maybe relief options this year, depending on how things work out. Johnny Brito, Randy Vasquez, and Drew Thorpe. Johnny Brito probably will see the most time in their rotation this year, although I think Drew Thorpe probably has the highest ceiling of any of these guys, and I really like Drew Thorpe long-term. Maybe not necessarily in 2024, but I think long-term Drew Thorpe will be in that Padres rotation for a while and be a solid option. I really like what he offers. But that was their offseason, really. Those were the big hits in the offseason. I think they're missing another signing here for their outfield, because just getting into this lineup, it's top heavier than it has been the past couple of years. I think that's kind of an issue right now. I think I still think the offense is going to be good, but yeah, it's a lot top heavier, especially without Soto and even Trent Grisham, without him in this lineup, because they start out Fernando Tatis in right field leading off, then Xander Bogaerts. They have him playing second base because Ha-Seong Kim is playing shortstop now for this team. And then Jake Cronenworth at first base, Manny Machado at third base in the cleanup hitting spot, Ha-Seong Kim batting fifth, shortstop, Luis Camposano at catcher, Jurickson Profar in left field. Jackson Merrill, their top prospect, Fangraphs has at DH on opening day, which is interesting. And then Jose Asocar in center field. Like, after Tatis, Bogaerts, Cronenworth, Machado, even lump in Kim, he's shown he's a solid offensive option. Not amazing, but like a little bit better than league average. Can get on base pretty well. Good bat-to-ball skills. Walks a good amount, doesn't strike out too much. I like his bat. It's fine. But then after that, it's like Camposano, Profar. You don't know what you're going to get from Merrill at the plate this year as a rookie. I don't know if he's going to start on opening day for them either. And then Jose Asocar, who offers not much at the plate, along with Jurickson Profar. That's just very top heavy. It's a very top heavy lineup. I think Tatis is going to go absolutely crazy this year. I think he should be a favorite to win NL MVP. He played almost a full season last year after coming back from his suspension. He played 141 games. He was striking out less than he did in his career prior. He had less power at the plate, though. I don't know if I'm super alarmed by that or not. He still looked solid at the plate, just not quite as amazing he had looked in years prior. I don't know exactly. I think there was less poolside power. I don't know if it was his injury / not playing baseball for a little bit that really hurt his year. I like that he cut the strikeout rate, but just the power was lacking. Like, he hit 25 home runs, but that's nowhere near what you'd expect from him in almost a full season. You'd expect a 30 to 40 home run production from him. But then what was fantastic for him last year is he won a gold glove playing right field last year. The experiment of moving into right field worked. He looked really good out there. And he still offers a lot on the base path. Like, he stole his most bases in his career in a season last year with 29, which was expected. So offensively, I feel like he's going to have a way better year than he did last year, and the projections think so too. Fangraphs is aggressively projecting him for almost a 6-WAR season and like a 25 WRC plus bump from last season. I think just playing that year last year after missing a full year, essentially not starting the year with the team because of the suspension, I think it just affected his power a little bit. I don't know if the bat speed was necessarily affected, but I think he'll have a better offensive year this year, which would put him in the MVP conversation paired with his speed and his outfield prowess that we know. I wonder if they'll try him in center field this year because he was so good in right. I don't see any reason why not. Trent Grisham's not blocking him there. They don't really have a center fielder that I'm confident in at the plate at all in the minors. Like, I don't think Jackson Merrill's going to play center field. I think if anything, Jackson Merrill should be playing in the corner, left field or right field, if they're not going to play him at shortstop. I don't know. I just think I think Tatis is in for a big year. And then Bogaerts, as he declines, I still think the makeup of his hit, of his production at the plate is fine. I think he's going to have a pretty good year. I don't, like, he's supposedly going to be playing second base. So that's something. We'll see him in a new position. I can't imagine he'll be worse at second base than he was at shortstop last year. And he was pretty solid at shortstop last year. He's come a long way with his defense. And I just feel like he'll still, maybe the power will continue to decline, but I think he's still a threat to just get on base. Well, I like his approach at the plate. Jake Cronenworth at first base. Cronenworth has been what feels like him and Manny Machado in this lineup for the past 3 seasons have felt just like a staple and in terms of games played. And Cronenworth was really good in 21-22 and then had a fall off last year. Weirdly, a weird fall off. He played a little bit less games. I think he had some batted ball luck not go his way. But he just simply was not, in every facet of his game, was just not as good of a hitter or defender. So you look for him to hopefully bounce back. Fangraphs is still expecting him to be a little bit above average at the plate. I think with some more batted ball luck, I can totally see that happening this year. And then Manny Machado, I mean, talk about stability. Like, Manny Machado has been one of the most consistent players in the league for a decade now, it feels like, and I don't see any reason to factor in a super steep decline in age 31 this year. Definitely he's looked, I don't want to say worse at the plate, but definitely not as good. Worse is the correct term to say. He's been worse. Like, in 2022, his BABIP was high. I think he put up 7.5 F-WAR, like almost won the MVP. He got a little lucky, batted ball-wise. And then last year, he kind of swung completely the opposite way and got a little bit unlucky. And so maybe there's some normalization this year. And so maybe he doesn't put up 153 WRC plus like he did in 22. Maybe he doesn't put up 114 WRC plus like he did last year. Maybe he falls in the 125, 130-ish range, I think, is healthy. Because his K rate was down last year. His walk rate was down a little bit too, but not enough to be super alarmed. I do just think the balls weren't quite falling for him, and that is reflective of the entire team. So I still think he provides stability in his as he ages. I still think he's going to play a good amount and with solid defense at third base. I don't know if you can, like, promise that he's going to be the best defender at third like he has been, or at least, like, a top three defender for third like he's been in the past, but I think still very stable third base option for them. And then, yeah, the lineup just gets ugly after that. Ha-Seong Kim, I just talked about, he's fine and just one of the better defenders up the middle in the game that we have today. Awesome to watch him play second base and shortstop. You hope Luis Camposano can do something and progress at catcher this year. It's been wildly disappointing what he's been at the plate since debuting. It's not exactly what you want to see at all. Like, the sample last year was good, theoretically, at the plate. but it was so small. It was 49 game sample, and he did hit 7 home runs. I mean, he didn't strike out that much. I think he profiles not as a super heavy strikeout guy, but I just need to see a full season of him catching and actually like a few months worth of offense to really think he's a worthwhile catcher. Fangraphs thinks he will be league average at the plate, and like his scout grades are 20-ish home runs a year with a fine hit tool. I don't know if he's going to be an amazing catcher behind the dish, but I guess we'll see with a full season under his belt, hopefully this year. And then like Jurickson Profar and Jose Azucar in left field and center field, those should not be, if you are wanting to be a contending team, those should not be your outfielders. The Jurickson Profar is utility guy at best right now, and Azucar as well. Tommy Pham is a free agent. They signed Tommy Pham and put him in left field. It's an immediate upgrade for them because they don't have much depth at that position either. Like I said, Jackson Merrill, top prospect, shortstop. I'd love to see him play shortstop at the big league level. I don't want to push Ha-Seong Kim out of that position because he's so valuable at short. And Bogarts, like, should they just put Bogarts at DH? Or in the corner, could he play corner outfield? If I'm starting Jackson Merrill at the big league level this year, I would rather start him at shortstop because I think the defense is supposed to be good and just hopefully have him develop slowly as a hitter. But I'd rather not start him in the big leagues as a DH, particularly because that's not like currently the best part of his game. I think you want to start a guy who's been your shortstop prospect and seemingly a good defender at shortstop. So starting him at DH, I don't think would make much sense to me. So I don't know. I don't know what they do there, but that is their offense. I see it as top heavy, and that just carries a little bit more risk. And having Juan Soto not be in that lineup is not ideal. And then the pitching, I'm not too bullish on the pitching, although there's good depth here. They have Joe Musgrove, Yu Darvish, Michael King, Johnny Brito, and Randy Vasquez. I'm looking forward for Drew Thorpe. I really want to see Drew Thorpe pitch some innings this year for this team. And I think he will. I think he'll start in the minors, but I really like Drew Thorpe. And then like they have depth wise after that, like Matt Waldron, Adrian Morejon, Pedro Avila. I think they have plenty of starting options. I'm just not sure they're particularly great. I think Musgrove and Darvish are a fine 1-2 at the top, and I like Michael King as a 3 starter. I think Johnny Brito's stuff will be fine and play in that ballpark. I'm not quite as confident in Randy Vasquez. Long-winded thing to say, like I think this rotation is fine, and I think they're going to be fine this year. And I think the bullpen's going to be solid. I think Robert Suarez, Yuki Matsui, Aniel De Los Santos, Wandy Peralta, even like Woosuk Gu and Steven Wilson, I think those are all solid relief arms. So I think right now, I don't know about the depth in their bullpen, but I think that's at least going to shake out to a pretty good, like a good bullpen, not an amazing one. But those are all guys I think will have pretty solid years in the pen. And it makes out to a team that's projected to be 80-82 or 81-81, like Pecota and Fangraphs say. So that is this team. I think if you want to be a serious contender, you can't have Jurickson Profar and Jose Azucar in center field and left field. Tommy Pham is out there. Even like JD Martinez, put him at DH, and just if you're not going to play Jackson Merrill at shortstop, stick him in left field. I think he's been doing that in the minors. I think they've been shifting him to second base and left field in the minors in preparation for him maybe not starting at shortstop every day in the bigs this year. And I'm wondering if he starts on opening day at all. I think this team could be pretty different by the trade deadline. I think they could they be sellers at the deadline if they're out of it? Maybe. More likely, I see them as buyers because I don't think they're going to be out of it. I think they're going to be close enough in what will be like a really interesting wild card race. So I think they're going to be close enough to try to go for it. I think an obvious position to upgrade will be the outfield and maybe another starter, and you go from there. I think just right now, I think they need to sign Tommy Pham and or JD Martinez to short-term deals if they have the money. I'm assuming they have some money, and that I think is what they need to do, because I just see a top-heavy lineup with risk if any of those best guys go down. But you do have Fernando Tatis, so that's something. I do think the X factor for this team, I think, is Jackson Merrill, because if Jackson Merrill comes up and is the guy, if he is their number one prospect, he's been one of the top prospects in baseball for a while. If he is that dude, that would make a massive, massive difference to this team. So I think he's the X factor for the San Diego Padres in 2024. And then what is their over-under win total? It's 81.5. And this division is going to be brutal for these over-unders. 81.5. What is the Giants? Ooh, the Giants is the same. I don't know, actually. 81.5. I am going to go over because I think this team still obviously sees themselves in a contention window, and I think they buy at the deadline, pushing for the wild card. And I think with the current players they have, the floor is pretty high. I think the ceiling is kind of capped based on their peripheral players. But again, with an addition of a better outfielder or DH or another good starter you can trust that's not like a rookie or a really early in his career guy, I think that would really do wonders for this team. So I'm going to go over 81.5. I think they might cap out at like an 85-win team, 86-win team, even if they add at the deadline. But that could be enough to make the playoffs. It would have been last year for this team. So that is the San Diego Padres. And we will move on to the next team projected to get third place, the San Francisco Giants. Baseball's wackiest and weirdest team by far. I mean, this is just a bizarre baseball team. Not this season in particular, just in general. The Giants are just kind of wacky. This year is very similar to last year projection-wise, because the projections are saying aggressively mediocre. They won 79 games last year. They went 79-83. Their Pythagorean record was 76-86. Their win-loss projections this year from Pecota is 82-80, and the same for Fangraphs, around 40% playoff odds for both. And that's more or less what they were projected for last year, and almost did it. I think they were projected to go like 80-82 last year, so maybe a couple more wins this season in their projections, but I cannot say I'm surprised just looking at the makeup of this team. And I said it last year, it's a dangerous thing for a Giants team to be projected for mediocre, because you just literally never know what they're going to do. See the 2021 season when they won 108 games. Like, what the fuck was that? That's the Giants, baby. But I think there's reason to be optimistic with this team. I think this team is more fun to watch than they have been in a while. Because particularly, even the 108 win team, that was fun because they were just winning games for no apparent reason. But like, even the last couple of years' teams, there just hasn't been much to watch, like much fun to watch from a neutral perspective. I mean, I guess you have like Camilo Duvall is pretty fun to watch. Logan Webb is one of my favorite pitchers in the league. But like, I'm not really, like Mike Yastrzemski doesn't really do it for me. Like Tyro Estrada is a solid player, but not particularly fun to watch. Like Michael Conforto has just not been himself after injury. But this year's team, there's interest. And they had a pretty solid offseason. I actually think they had I don't know if I want to say a great offseason, but a really good offseason for them. Particularly with the Matt Chapman signing that happened recently. And for a team that's just kind of missed out on a couple big free agents the past couple of years, Aaron Judge, probably for worse, Carlos Correa, maybe for the better. I know they were in on like Yamamoto and Shohei, theoretically. Didn't sign him, which, you know, is whatever. They did, however, sign Jung Ho Lee out of Japan. And KBO. And I love Jung Ho Lee. I'm a big fan. Grandson of the Wind, center fielder. I'm a big fan. I'm high on Jung Ho Lee. And he was their biggest offseason acquisition for a considerable sum of money, but not like something that's like ground, like that's going to really hamper them in the next couple of years. I mean, they gave him, what did they give him? Why is it not? Yeah. $113 million. I was looking at the wrong thing. Over 6 years. That's more or less kind of what you'd pay an extension for a guy. That's like almost $19 million AAV for a center fielder. You believe, clearly the Giants believe he's going to play good center field, and a guy who looks just like a contact getting on base machine. 6 for $113 is really not that expensive. It's, again, that's like an extension in year two or three for a guy you think is pretty solid and valuable to your club. For $19 million a year, buying out a couple years of free agency is kind of what this looks like, because he's only 25 too, so I think that was a really good deal. And then obviously Matt Chapman recently on a really nice contract. Jorge Soler, they brought in Jordan Hicks, Tom Murphy as well for their backup catcher role, which I really like for them. I just think they had a really, really solid offseason. I think they signed guys they needed to sign. I still think they should sign Blake Snell. I think they might too. I know they've been talking. I think Blake Snell would move the needle, I think, for me, for this team. And I think they might just have to, it might be one of those contracts where you give him 5 or 6 years, and those last 3 years might be really bad, but you get him now and he really helps your team now. So you might just have to eat that if you're the Giants, and they can afford it. They have plenty of money. But their lineup looks better than it has in quite some time, a little bit more balanced too. And just running through it, they have Jung Ho Lee leading off in center field, Tyro Estrada at second base, Lamont Wade Jr. at first base, Jorge Soler at DH, Michael Conforto in left field, Matt Chapman at third base, Mike Yastrzemski in right field, Patrick Bailey at catcher, and Fangraph has Marco Luciano at shortstop on opening day, which might not be the case. There's rumblings that he might start the year in AAA, which I guess I'm not totally against, but I don't really see the point of that. I would just start him at shortstop in the big leagues now. I would just do it now. Whether or not he's really ready, I think you kind of have to do that. But it might sound like they start him in AAA, and then I guess they play Nick Ahmed and Wilmer Flores, Tyro Estrada at shortstop, or something of those three. But I like the floor of this lineup. I think top down on paper, it's pretty solid. I like Jung Ho Lee a lot. I'm big on him. Even if there's an adjustment period, I think his bat to ball skills and his just feel for the strike zone is going to be really good leading off and setting the table for this lineup. I think he's going to get on base a lot. Fangraphs think so too. 350 OBP, they're projecting him with a 289 average. That's a really good leadoff hitter. With just 10 home runs, which I think that's the concern, is both the ballpark he's in, and he's not especially powerful, but he's kind of a big dude, and he's only 25. And the more and more I hear about him from people on the Giants beat, is that they think there's more power in his body than what is currently projected. Maybe not this year, maybe next year, who knows, but I really like him in the leadoff spot. I like Tyro Estrada too. I feel like he's just been a solid player. This team is full of like 2 to 3 win players at almost every position, which makes it rather difficult to upgrade each position, which is an interesting task, because like you're looking at 2 wins at each position. That is roughly league average, which is why they're, you know, projected to be bang average. You're like 2 war is about what you're looking for an average major league player. And so it's just kind of hard to build on that, because even just compiling a lot of those guys is difficult in and of itself. But like Tyro Estrada is one of those guys. I think Lamont Wade, at first base, late night Lamont. I like him as a platoon first baseman. I think if I'm them, and I don't think they're going to do this, I would hold on to J.D. Davis. Now that you signed Chapman, J.D. Davis was basically their full-time third baseman before that, so now Chapman is going to be everyday third baseman, not a platoon. So that pushes J.D. Davis off the position to the bench. I would just run him as a full-time platoon at first base with Lamont Wade, and maybe that doesn't get the most value out of him, but I don't know what else you do at this point besides trade him. So I do think they will trade him. I also just don't know what you're going to get back. I think he's getting paid like $7 million. That's not my issue. I just think the Giants need frontline pitching still, and I don't think J.D. Davis is really going to get you that unless you include something else. Maybe they just get a reliever. I don't know. I just don't think they're going to fetch a super good pitcher for J.D. Davis right now. So I think right now he's slated to be the platoon at first base, backup third baseman. It sucks for him too because he's been getting better at third base. That was the big thing, him coming over from the Mets, is like, can he actually play third? He's improved a lot at third base. So it sucks for him that they went out and signed a guy who was miles ahead of him at third base in terms of fielding in Matt Chapman. But we'll see what they do with J.D. Davis. And then Jorge Soler, DH. I really like this signing. They needed this. They needed a power bat in the middle of this lineup who can just hit the ball really hard. I really like Jorge Soler. Not a huge deal, too. Like, you just get him for a couple of years. I really like this. This is something they absolutely needed in this lineup, just some power out of the right-handed hitting spot. And he's projected for 30 home runs on the dot on FanGraphs. I've seen, like, in the 20s, I've seen low 30s. I feel like it just depends on if he plays, because if he plays, we know he can hit the ball hard and hit dingers. That's what he's been doing for a little while now. And I think why the 30 home run mark is particularly amusing with the Giants, if you don't know, they have two Bonds curses, actually. One is the left field spot, which they haven't had the same left field starter on opening day since Bonds in 2007, or I guess from 2006 to 2007. That was the last time they repeated left field starters on opening day. And it looks like we're going to continue that this year with Michael Conforto starting in left field. I think it was Blake Sable last year on opening day for them, so that would be another year of that Bonds curse. But the one that's more important is they haven't had a 30 home run hitter in a season since Barry Bonds in 2004, even longer than 07. And Jorge Soler, I mean, he's as good a bet as anyone in the past few years to break that. It's just an astounding record. It's not like a home run heavy ballpark, but it's 30 home runs. The fact that they went through 2018 and 2019 without having a 30 home run hitter is absurd. But I like Soler in the middle of this lineup. Michael Conforto, I'm not super high on him going forward in his career. I just don't know if he can be a good MLB player again, or even just stay on the field with all the problems he had, and particularly just the shoulder has affected his swing so much. So that, I think, also will be him and Yastrzemski in right field will definitely see platoon time with Austin Slater, because I think Conforto probably starts every day over Yastrzemski, because Yastrzemski, Slater is like actually just a really solid platoon in right field for them, and I think that'll continue this year. And then Matt Chapman, I was not a fan of the Mariners signing him, but that was more because of the price that I thought he would fetch earlier on in the offseason. Matt Chapman, for the price that they got him at, is like $20 million this year, and then two team options for like $18 and $16 million, I think it's something like that, the next couple of years. That is a really good deal for Matt Chapman. I would have absolutely taken that for the Mariners, because as much as I don't love his bat moving forward into his career, he hasn't been a below average hitter since he came up in the league. He does hit the ball hard, like fairly consistently, and he's done that well the past couple of years. It's just weird. It's been not a whole lot of pull side power. Like, if he was pulling the ball more the past few years, I think he would have been an even more valuable player. But he sprays the ball around a lot, which is not going to be super helpful in this ballpark. Despite him hitting the ball hard, that would just... If you paired his hard hit rate with more pull, he'd have a lot more power numbers is what I'm trying to say. But offensively, I think he'll be like good for the Giants. I don't think he's going to be like amazing offensively, but again, he's never been a below average hitter at all. So as much as I think the vibe of him was like, oh, he's a really bad offensive player, he's not. He's his worst WRC plus came in 2021 with the A's, and it was 101. And then 118 and 110 the past couple years with consistently walking a little bit above league average and striking out also a little bit above league average. But again, he hits the ball hard pretty well, and you know what you're getting on defense. I don't know if you can really call him confidently the best, if like at worst the number two defensive third baseman in the league like he was with the A's. It was basically him and Arenado were the top two, and it wasn't particularly close. But I still think you can confidently say he's a very good third baseman. So that was a great signing for them, something they needed for sure. And I think that's huge if they're going to start Marco Luciano a lot at shortstop, because I've heard mixed reviews on Luciano's defense, and I think just having Chapman next to him will definitely do more good than it would if like JD Davis was next to him, so that helps. He's Marco Luciano, he's my X factor for this team, man. It could be a lot of players on this team, but Marco Luciano, if he comes up and he pops and he finally lives up to the long-awaited hype that he has garnered as a prospect at the plate, it would be huge for this team. Massive. Massive. Especially in this competitive division. I think they kind of need that from the shortstop spot, and I feel like they need a win. They need a player development win, because there's been so many failures in recent years with the player development with this team. They need a big win in Luciano. And then Patrick Bailey, I don't necessarily know how good he's going to be at the plate this year or even going forward, but he is a sexy defender. Boy, go watch him. Watch him play defense. It is nice. Just looks like already maybe the best defensive catcher in the league, and he's played, how many games has he played? Like 3 months of ball? How long did he play? 97 games last year, yeah. So, and he provided 2.8 war in those 97 games behind the plate with a 78 WRC plus. He had like a 600 OPS and 2.8 war. That's how good he was defensively for that half of the season. So they're at least going to get that for him this year, and I like that. And that's their lineup. I think they could use another outfielder potentially in the corner spots, but I don't think this lineup is in bad shape. I think it's better than it has been in recent years. And then the pitching staff, there's actually a semblance of a five-man pitching staff here somewhat, which is different than recent years. I love Logan Webb as their ace. He's not the best ace in the league in terms of ERA and like rate stats, but he has been one of the more durable guys the last couple of years. He throws a lot of innings at a very solid clip. I really, really like him for that reason. He threw 216 innings last year, 3.25 ERA. I'm a changeup guy too, and he has one of the best changeups in the league. Like, if you want to nerd out about it, it's one of the best examples of seam shifted wake that we have in the major leagues right now. Really amazing. I love him. Great pitcher. And then after that, it's like iffy right now. It's Kyle Harrison, their top prospect. I'm a stuff plus guy too, so I really like Kyle Harrison. I like him this year. I don't know how many innings they're going to have him throw. My problem with this starting five is the innings. Like, aside from Logan Webb, like, Kyle Harrison, I think, is going to be good. I just don't know if they're going to try to limit his innings, because he hasn't thrown very many in the big leagues at all. Like, he came up in September last year. And then they have Jordan Hicks, who they signed and are going to try to be a starter. And I don't really believe in him as a starter, if I'm being honest with you. But I hope he proves me wrong. I think they're going to, like, ramp him up. I don't think they're going to throw him in like April and May as like an out and out, like, here, you're starting, we want you to go five or six innings. I think maybe they'll use him as a 1-2 inning opener at the start of the year, or maybe if that doesn't go well, they just have him as a follower and be like, hey, just go out there, throw three innings. We'll see if you can stretch it out to four or five later in the year. I don't know how that's going to go, but I think his floor is pretty high because if the starting doesn't work out, you can just put him in the bullpen and he's going to be a really good reliever for you. And then after those three guys, it's rookies and then guys who were hurt, who they're hoping to come back middle of through the year. So Keaton Winn, rookie, I really like Keaton Winn, especially with a good defense behind him and in this ballpark. Really nice fastball splitter combo. I think he's going to have a pretty solid rookie year, and the defense definitely will help him. And then they have right now on Fangraphs Mason Black, a guy who has not thrown an inning in the major leagues yet. Another rookie pitcher. I don't know too much about him. The projections are fairly modest, but I think they kind of just will need him to hold water until their other pitchers come back. So they have another rookie who pitched a little bit last year in Tristan Beck, who looks like a guy who can throw five decent pitches, just one of those type of guys. But he is hurt right now. He had vascular surgery for an upper arm aneurysm, which I don't especially know what that means, but it doesn't sound good. So I think like a couple months he's going to be out. And then their other two notable injuries are Alex Cobb, who had hip surgery last October, and then Robbie Ray, who had Tommy John in May last year. I think Robbie Ray, they're shooting for around the All-Star break for him to come back. And then Alex Cobb, I think a little earlier than that, but Alex Cobb is like 36. I think this is not the first time he's hurt his hip, so they could slow play him as well. But they're looking to get both those guys back in the middle of the year, which would be mighty helpful for that rotation. And then their bullpen, I think this bullpen is going to be good. Especially with less openers, less usage on some of these guys with more starters in their arsenal right now. Camilo Duvall, one of the best closers in the league, electric stuff, love watching him. Tyler and Taylor Rogers, the brothers who could not throw differently. I really like them. They're both effective relievers. Luke Jackson is a solid relief pitcher. Ryan Walker had a really good year last year, kind of out of the bullpen. He logged like 15-ish starts, I think. But he was an opener. But he was really good. He was really good last year as an opener and a reliever. So I expect him to have an even better year this year. Especially like if he's just working out of the bullpen predominantly, I think he's going to have a really good year in that pen. And then like Ethan Small, I've heard some pretty good things about. Eric Miller, there's some other guys that'll probably contribute, but those are the main like five guys in that bullpen. So I do like the bullpen. I like the pitching staff a little bit more going into the year than last year. I like the lineup more than last year. I just feel like they're a better team than they were last year. I think the floor is higher. I think the ceiling is whatever you can get out of Marco Luciano, Kyle Harrison, Keaton Winn. Jordan Hicks is a starter. Like if they sign Blake Snell, that would really help. Like I just think they need to get some young guys cooking this year if they want to really be good, because they have like Casey Schmidt as well, who I guess could play some shortstop. I love his glove at short, not necessarily his bat really at all. And then Luis Matos is the only other guy I wanted to mention here. He came up last year and he is a profile as a corner outfielder. He's a really weird player. He profiles as a corner outfielder, but with like a really good hit tool. And he's not particularly fast, but he's not big. He's like 5'11". He's just like kind of a bizarre makeup of a player, but hit really well in AA and AAA last year, and he seems like the type to heavy contact, not necessarily striking out very much, walking around league average, which heavy contact, spraying the ball around, not striking out a bunch, would play fairly well to that kind of big outfield in San Francisco, but I don't know. I think we'll see a fair amount of him. I think what will help him play more is he is a right-handed hitter, and they're so lefty heavy in their outfield that I think that will just get him more reps there. So that's the only other guy, the young guy, who I want to see show me something this year. Show me something. But I like this team. I don't know. I just don't know. It's a really tough division too. That's the really tough part. It's like it's a good enough team, but in a very competitive, tough division with one of the best teams in baseball, and then like D-backs and Padres are no slouch. So it'll be tough. It'll be tough for them. And their over-under is the same as the Padres, 81.5. And I'm going to take the over. I feel like the Giants and the Padres both win like 82, 83 games. I'm taking their over with like the caveat of I think they're going to sign Blake Snell. I think they're going to get him. And that would take me over 81.5. And that is the San Francisco Giants. And I will move on to the last two teams here. But this one, the team went to the World Series last year, projected to get second place in this division. Yes, it is the Arizona Diamondbacks. The Snakes roll on Snakes. Yes, the Diamondbacks, which had a miracle run, I guess you could describe it as, to the World Series last year to get beaten by the Texas Rangers. But what can you really do this year that will live up to last year? I mean, I guess win the World Series, but even, I mean, I feel like if you ask Diamondbacks fans, last year was absolutely a rousing success still despite losing the World Series. I mean, they won 84 games, snuck into the wild card, and went on a crazy run because that's just how it works sometimes. And I doubt that fans would trade that experience for anything. And it wasn't like an unsustainable run. Like, you saw plenty of stuff last year that you are hoping the team builds on this year. And then as a fan, I think they had the offseason, not like a perfect offseason, but a really good one. Damn near perfect for like a team in their position, because they have a lot of young players. They have one of the best young players in the game in Corbin Carroll that looks like an absolute superstar. One rookie of the year, looks like a just a really good long-term player for them that they can build around. Gabriel Moreno had a really good year last year coming back in that Dalton Varsho trade from the Blue Jays. And then you just had guys like Ketel Marte, Christian Walker continue to be really solid options. And like Zach Gallen, Merrill Kelly, you had Brandon Fott come alive in the playoffs last year. You traded for Paul Sewald at the deadline to shore up the back of the bullpen. Like, I think the process for how they've built this team, I think, is absolutely correct. And they go to the World Series, and they lose. And they're like, well, we've clearly have a core, a young core to build around for the next few years. Let's do that. And they go out. They re-sign Lourdes Gurriel Jr. to a pretty team-friendly $36 million three-year deal. And he was a part of that run last year, and I think you want to bring him back. It's definitely a need for them, and they did that. And then they went out and got another pitcher, Eduardo Rodriguez, one of the better pitchers on the market, for 4 years, $80 million, which $20 million AAV for a pitcher like Eduardo Rodriguez is not too shabby, in my opinion. I think there's reasons to be a little bit down on him moving forward, but I'll get into that later. But I still think that is a good contract overall to just be a solid pitcher. You're not going to ask him to be the ace of this team, but he will contribute to you winning ball games. And then they signed also Jock Peterson just to kind of shore up the DH spot a little bit. But I think that offseason is kind of what you're looking for. Again, as a fan of this team, they're like, okay, we're committed to winning. Let's spend a little bit of money and make a couple, well, I guess not a couple. They did make a couple trades, but then the one big trade, shoring up third base, getting Eugenio Suarez from the Mariners for Carlos Vargas and Sebi Zavala. And bada bing, bada boom, you enter 2024, projected to get second in this division behind maybe the best team in baseball in the Dodgers. And for good reason. They're projected by Pecota to go 85-77, Fangraphs 84-78. They have the fourth best farm system, according to Keith Law. I think a lot of that is at the top with their top three prospects. One of them, number three, Tommy Troy, they just drafted. And then Drew Jones and Jordan Lawler. We saw a little bit of Jordan Lawler last year. And then Drew Jones, I think there's question marks about him right now, but he still has a top prospect pedigree. I think this is a big year for him. But this Diamondbacks team is good. I think it's a well-balanced team. I liked all of their offseason moves. I think it addressed many areas of need in the team. And yeah, what's the lineup looking like? Leading off, Corbin Carroll. Corbin Carroll, Seattle native, in right field. Ketel Marte at second base, Gabriel Moreno at catcher. In the cleanup role, Christian Walker at first base, Jock Peterson DHing, Eugenio Suarez at third base, Alec Thomas in center field, Lourdes Gurriel Jr. in left field, and Geraldo Perdomo at shortstop. Now, the top of this lineup is awesome. I'm a big fan. Corbin Carroll, Ketel Marte, Gabriel Moreno, and Christian Walker. That's a really good 1-4 to start this lineup. That's also, it's a really good mix of power and some speed there and a lot of contact ability and high average. Like Corbin Carroll has a true, he's just a five-tool player. He's surprisingly powerful for his stature, but he can really get into a ball and he sprays it around the ballpark too. And he's like a conservative estimate from all the projections this year is a 2040 season. And I think he could, like 30-50 is absolutely in reach for him. I think he could hit 30 home runs in the peak of his career. Is it next year? Maybe not. Maybe it's a 20-25 home run season with 40 to 50 stolen bases next year, which is still crazy, especially because he's probably going to hit for a pretty high average and play solid defense in right field. They're not asking him to play center field, which I also think is good. Ketel Marte has just been consistently one of the better second basemen in the league. Big fan of him hitting at the top of this lineup, and I don't think a fall-off is coming anytime soon. He did just turn 30, but I still think he's going to be a pretty stable option for them. Gabriel Moreno at catcher really had a nice season last year, showed really good contact ability and athleticism from a catcher. I not like the most power. He doesn't profile as a classic like home run catcher, but I think big ballpark, I think he's going to hit a lot of doubles, get on base at a pretty high clip, and he showed he's really stable behind the plate, throwing runners out, and I think his framing will come along as well. And then Christian Walker, I really like Christian Walker. The past couple of years has been one of the best first basemen in every sense of the word, defensively and offensively. Really good ballpark for him to hit in. Plenty of power and just really, really solid first base defense. And then after that, it gets a little bit, inconsistent, I guess, but I still think it's a solid, like, 5-9 they have here. Jock Peterson at DH, I think at this point in his career, he is at best a platoon DH. His outfield defense, I mean, he can still play out there, but I don't think they're going to want him to very much, and they don't necessarily need him to. They got plenty of outfielders, and he'll probably, I guess he'll DH platoon-wise with, like, Randall Grichuk. That's like, a kind of a hole on this roster as a right-handed DH to platoon with Jock. Eugenio Suarez, I mean, sad to see him leave the Mariners, but I think it's a really good get for them because no matter what he does this year, barring, like, a Colton Wong type of year, it's going to be better than what they got from third base last year. That was a really big gap in their production last year, and I think Eugenio had a down year. I think he's on the decline offensively. I feel like his bat speed is slowed down. He's gonna whiff a lot, strike out a lot. But when he connects with the ball, he connects with the ball, and it's a way better ballpark for him to hit in than in Seattle. And his third base defense, maybe in part thanks to Perry Hill of the Mariners, really was amazing last year. He made a case for a Gold Glove last year, which was pretty astounding. So I think you're getting probably pretty stable defense over there. And he's also been so durable. One of the things that I think is so underrated, especially in today's game, is a guy who can just play and posts every day. In the past 3 years, I think he's missed, he played every game last year. I think he's missed like 20 games in the past three seasons. He's played so much, and that's a huge part of his value. And even if his hitting is lackluster, I still think you're going to get 20 home runs from him and decent third base defense. And if he plays every day, then you don't need to worry about any platoons or anything. So it's good. It's good. And then Alec Thomas and Lourdes Gurriel. Lourdes Gurriel, I do like his bat a lot in that ballpark. He was going to be one of the better players available last year in free agency, and the Diamondbacks said, nope, we're just going to re-sign him real quick. We like him. He's going to be probably a closer to league average corner outfielder with, I don't think great defense, but a good bat in that ballpark too. He's never been a below average hitter in his career since coming up with the Blue Jays. I don't see why he would be a below average hitter next year. I feel like he's a fairly consistent guy who Makes a lot of contact and has a good amount of power. Doesn't strike out a whole lot. Doesn't walk a whole lot either, but just puts the ball in play really well. And it's just a solid option for them. Alec Thomas, hitting-wise, I'd really love to see him cut down on the whiffs because his defense in center field is really good for them. I think that they're not going to ask him to do too much offensively, but I don't know. I'd be worried. There's other outfielders that could usurp him on this Diamondbacks team, because if he really is terrible at the plate, it's like the balancing act of how good is he has to be in center field for us to continue playing him every day because the bat is so bad. I think it can get better. He's shown he can hit the ball pretty hard, not the hardest, but he can make pretty good contact. I think he just has to cut back on the whiffs and maybe draw some more walks because he's really fast. If he gets on base a little bit more, even like 10% more than they did last year, I think that'd be a much better player because you have like Jake McCarthy in the wings ready to take his place, who has similar troubles, I think. But, you know, he's going to be at the bottom of this lineup and playing solid center field defense for them. So it's at the end of the day, you're still going to get that. And then the last player in this lineup is Geraldo Perdomo. And he had just an out of nowhere really good offensive year last year. I don't think his defense at shortstop's ever been a huge question, but offensively there's not really any power there, but there's plenty of contact ability. And he cut his strikeout rate a little bit last year. He walked a really good amount, 353 on base with a 246 average. That's a really good walk rate. And then 359 slug is where it's a little ugly. 99 WRC plus for like a player that I never really saw being that, because he just lacks power at all. He doesn't, like, I don't know. He also just kind of struggled to hit like fastballs, which is not something you can struggle with in if you want to be a good hitter in Major League Baseball. So I don't know if it's entirely like if he replicates last year at all. 295 BABIP compared to 243 in 2022. So maybe, I don't know, a guy who relies so much on contact and little power, I struggle to project and think is going to be consistent year to year because it's so reliant on batted balls and batted ball quality. So I don't know. I feel like they're going to have Jordan Lawler be the guy at some point this year. That is my biggest question for this team, is when do they just hand Jordan Lawler the reins? Because if Perdomo gives you what he did last year, it would be hard to just give it over to Jordan Lawler after the short but awful performance he put on for a couple weeks last year. I wouldn't take a whole lot from that because it was like literally, what was it, 34 plate appearances. He just struck out most of the time and got like one hit. But Jordan Lawler has been their top prospect for a while. Looks like a guy who can be a really everyday shortstop coming up as a prospect, like a good fielder, really fast, projectable power onto his frame. Probably will strike out a decent amount, but I think if you are getting 25 home runs and good defense from shortstop, you're going to live with strikeouts, because I think just the hit tool is not his best trait. It's more his raw power, and him growing into his power at some point is his trait, because he's still only 21. I think he turns 22 this season. Like, I decided, like, right before I recorded this, he's my X factor for this team. Because if they give him the reins at some point, I don't think he's going to start on opening day. But if they call him up and say, hey, you're our everyday shortstop, like, Perdomo's going to be a utility man for us, which I think would be best case. If he is, I don't want to say as advertised, but like if he shows you something this year and has league average-ish production with some power and really good shortstop defense, with like the upside of, oh, what if he's just hits the ground running this year and is really good, that could really propel this team to being like almost a lock for the wild card, in my opinion, and being a little pesky to the Dodgers. Not necessarily challenging the Dodgers, but I think Jordan Lawler has that variability I'm looking for in an X factor, where there's so much upside. And I think at some point they're going to just give him the shortstop position this year, and they should. I think they should. And that's the offense. I think there's plenty of balance here. I like it top down. The depth at the plate I do worry about. I think fielding wise they're fine depth wise, but I think they could use another good outfield bat who can DH from the right hand side of the plate. Because Jock Peterson, I'm not hitting him against lefties. I don't know who. I guess it's Randall Grichuk in that platoon DH spot with Jock Peterson. So I think that could be improved upon. And then getting into the pitching, I really like this pitching staff. Zach Gallen has been one of the best pitchers in the league past couple of years. Really good, really nice fastball cutter combination. I don't have a whole lot to say for him. I think we can kind of expect his production and stability this year. Again, Merrill Kelly as their number two, a guy who I didn't see ever really being this good, but the past 2 years he's really shown something, and he's actually quite similar to Eduardo Rodriguez in a way, but pitching from the right side. He throws like six different pitches, fastball, changeup, slider, sinker, cutter, and it works for him. And it's not elite velocity. He doesn't have that much velocity on his fastball, but last two seasons he's been very consistent, a little bit more reliant on batted balls, which I think leads to more volatility year over year, so it's harder to project. But I think he's a pretty solid option for them at number two. And then Eduardo Rodriguez, like I said, their big free agent signing. The projections are a little tepid on him, and I think it's the same reason for Merrill Kelly, because he throws so many pitches. That is his style. It's, again, not elite velocity. He relies on control, less whiffs, more poor batted ball quality, and just like mixing it up with five different pitches that he throws. I just don't, especially him going from the AL Central and pitching in Detroit to the NL West and pitching in Arizona, I think will harm his production a little bit, just playing against better teams in a more hitter-friendly ballpark. I think that's why their projections say he's going to regress from last year, but I still think he's a fine option here. And then Ryan Nelson, a young pitcher who we saw a little bit last year. I know there's plenty of scouts who really believe in his fastballs, and I don't know enough, and I haven't delved enough into really Ryan Nelson to give you a good analysis here. I think people like his fastball to play off a cutter, and they want him to throw the cutter more than he did last year. But I think he's going to be their number five starter, and it's fine. And then Brandon Pfaadt. Really like Brandon Pfaadt. I liked him going into last year. Very topsy-turvy year from him. Well, I guess not topsy-turvy. For the most part, it wasn't good. And then in August, September, you started to see why he had a top prospect type of pedigree. You saw the fastball working off his sweeper that looked really nice, and then he really started to throw the sinker a lot more later in the year, and I think that really helped him. It played really well off of his fastball and was really, really, really helped him attack right-handed hitters with the sinker-sweeper combo. And then we saw him in the playoffs. He was amazing in the playoffs. I mean, Torey Lovullo had to start him in game three, like in a game three situation. After Gallen and Kelly, he had to start him because there really weren't any other options. They had those three guys, essentially, and it was like, oh, this rookie who had a promising last, six, seven starts of the year with, a 4 ERA and good whiff numbers, and he has lit the playoffs on fire. It was the Brandon Pfaadt coming out party last postseason, and I was so here for it. I'm so here for him in 2024. I think he's only going to improve, and I think he's going to have a really solid year for them. And that's their current rotation as currently constructed. I think, I don't know much about the depth. I think they have plenty of depth arms. There's a lot of AAA arms here. One of them is named Slade Cicconi, which I love that name, but I don't know much about the depth. I think they have depth, and I don't know. They have another rookie who was a rookie last year, Dre Jamison, who pitched a lot out of the bullpen, who had Tommy John in September, so I don't know if we're going to see him this year. And then just getting into the bullpen, Paul Sewald, I love Paul Sewald, and hopefully he doesn't regress this year too much. The projections think he will, and I think he just proves projections wrong. I think that's part of Paul Sewald. And then the rest of their bullpen, Andrew Salfrank, I really like. Ryan Thompson, Joe Mantiply, Luis Frias, Miguel Castro, and then the Gink, Kevin Ginkle. It was also kind of a coming out party for Kevin Ginkle. They really relied on him in the postseason last year, and he was really good. I think there's reason to expect he'll be good again this year. I think this is a fine bullpen, not an amazing bullpen, but I think it's fine. I think they will probably look to shore it up this year if they're in the race. At the trade deadline, I think that's another obvious place they could improve, and every team could always improve the bullpen. But I like this team. I like them to get second in this division. I think they are a decent amount better right now on paper and more balanced than, say, the Giants or the Padres. I think there's less volatility in here too. And they're over under, according to DraftKings, not a sponsor, 83.5. I will be taking the over. I think 83.5 is low. I think they will win closer to 86, 87 games, make the wild card, and I don't know about challenge the Dodgers, but I think this is going to be a good team with an improved rotation going into the year and some holes patched up on the offense. I think it's going to be a team that just kind of does a lot of things right, and it just has Corbin Carroll. Like, that really helps. That is very helpful. And that is it for the Diamondbacks. I like this team, but without further ado, and I don't know. Am I going to talk about this team very long? Maybe. The projected first place team in this division, the Los Angeles Dodgers, the talk of the offseason for many reasons. This team won 100 games last year, flamed out in the playoffs. Again, they're projected by Pakoda to win 101 games this year. Fangraphs is a lot lower on them with 94 wins, so a lot of variability there. I think this team is going to be one of the best teams in baseball. I think they really filled some holes on this team from last year, and the team looks honestly really, really disgusting. They signed Shohei Ohtani. All right, they signed Shohei Ohtani, and that in and of itself is phenomenal. $700 million, they're paying him like minimum wage for the first 10 years of that $700 million, so that's fun. And then they also paired it with signing the best pitcher available, because Shohei is not pitching this year, just DHing, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, who everyone is saying is raving about. And it's rare you see a guy come over from Japan and get that much guaranteed money, but he is that dude. I love watching him pitch. I've watched his bullpens a few times. Not only is the stuff crazy, it's just wild mechanics. Because he has a very methodical load, and then his leg kick, and he hits a pause, and then all of a sudden it's like a rubber band, just snap, and he throws like 100 miles an hour. For not a very big guy, it's crazy the torque he gets when he throws his pitches. I'm so excited to watch him pitch. What a signing. They also signed Teoscar Hernandez to a three-year, $45 million. They re-signed Clayton Kershaw, brought him back. They re-signed Jason Hayward, Ryan Brazier, Joe Kelly, Kike Hernandez recently. They brought a lot of guys back from last year. And this team looks insane. So just their lineup going through it. Mookie Betts at shortstop. That was news that came out the other yesterday. This news came out. Mookie Betts is going to be playing shortstop for, I think Dave Roberts said, for the foreseeable future, for now or something. It was like permanent for now, I think he said, which is a crazy thing to say, but Mookie Betts can do anything, and I wouldn't be surprised at all. So if he's going to play shortstop, he's going to play shortstop, and he's going to lead off, and he's going to be Mookie Betts, and that's amazing. Shohei Ohtani at DH, Freddie Freeman at first base, and that gives you one of the best 1-2-3s in the lineup I've ever seen in my lifetime. Very confident in saying that. That is video game type stuff. And then after that, it's not too shabby. Will Smith at catcher, Max Muncy at third base, James Outman in center field, Teoscar Hernandez in left field, Jason Hayward in right field, and Gavin Lux at second base. Just nasty. Absolutely nasty. And then on the bench, you have Austin Barnes, really nice backup catcher defensively. Miguel Rojas can play a lot of different infield positions. Utility god, Chris Taylor, still on this team. And then Kike Hernandez, just also classic utility man, one of the funniest dudes in the league, and obviously a big dugout presence for them. And really, what's more to say about this lineup? I mean Shohei is gonna full-time DH. I think he's gonna hit 45 home runs and be an amazing DH for them. Freddie Freeman is just Mr. Consistent. It's insane what he does year to year. Will Smith has been probably the best hitting catcher in the league for a while now, him and I guess JT Realmuto. He's been so consistent. Max Muncy at third base. Are we looking at regression in year, however, for Max Muncy when he's 33? Maybe. No matter what he does, he's going to be one of the better guys at getting on base in the league. James Outman really had a nice rookie year last year and will theoretically be the full-time center fielder. And I think the only thing I'd like to see him do from last year, I mean, he had a really good year last year, rookie season, is strike out a little bit less. He got on base at a very high clip last year. He showed a good amount of power and good base running, solid defense. I think he showed kind of everything you wanted from his rookie year. I think this year it's just about cutting down a little bit on the strikeouts because the walk rate's great, the power is there, and the fielding and base running is also there. I think he needs to improve on anything, it's just the strikeouts. And then Teoscar Hernandez, I think he's from a down year in Seattle. I think he's going to have a really nice year this year. Because he's going to the Dodgers and they're going to tweak something and he's going to be great. Jason Hayward, the reclamation project for the Dodgers that they often like to do with older veterans, they did it. They did it again last year. He was a more or less league average player in 124 games, maybe a little bit better than league average, after being maybe almost out of the league probably until the Dodgers signed him. And I can't believe they did it. And he's probably going to be a platoon with Chris Taylor and Kike Hernandez, and he'll probably be pretty okay for them again this year. And then Gavin Lux at second base. Gavin Lux has just been shifted around in this lineup considerably. He had a really nice 2022, and it was like, oh man, is this their shortstop of the future? Theoretically, yes. He missed all of last year. And then this year, it's like, all right, Gavin, you're going to play second base because Mookie's going to play shortstop, because why the hell not? And I think he will probably do a fair amount of platooning as well with Miguel Rojas and Kike Hernandez and Chris Taylor. Same with like Max Muncy. I think all those guys will see some platoon time with the right-handed bats they have on the bench. This lineup's going to be really good. It's going to be one of the best in the National League. I'm Mookie Betts, Shohei, Freddie Freeman. I'm so excited. I'm just excited to watch this team. And the pitching staff, their ace, Yoshinobu Yamamoto, all the reason to believe he's going to be really good. And I'm just excited to watch him. And then they traded for Tyler Glass now this offseason and extended him. That was another one of their big moves. I am in on Tyler Glass now in 2024. I think he's going to have a huge year for the Dodgers. I don't even know if the Dodgers are going to tweak anything, because the only problem with him the past few years has been health, because when he's pitched, he's been phenomenal. I just love the way he pitches, misses so many bats. Like, he's one of the kings in the league in whiffs. He's massive. He looks like Killian Murphy. He's very good looking. He's very charming. I'm gushing about this guy. I love Tyler Glass now, and I think he's going to have a huge year for them. And I think he needs to. I think he needs to have a big year. He's my X factor. He's my 2024 Dodgers X factor. They traded for him. They extended him. I think they're going to need him to be maybe not ace quality, because they have Yoshinobu Yamamoto and he theoretically should be the ace. But Tyler Glass, though, I mean, he might end up having a better year than Yamamoto. I'm so in on him this year, entering the year healthy. I think they're going to watch his innings probably a little bit and keep him healthier with the other pitchers that they have, which a lot of them are hurt right now, I will say. I'll talk about that, but I think he's going to have a big year. Bobby Miller, a rookie pitcher last year, one of the Millers that came up between him, Mason Miller, and Bryce Miller, and we're blessed with really talented Millers, pitching Millers that comes up because Bobby Miller is awesome. Bobby Miller impressed the hell out of me whenever I watched him last year. He was so good. I think he's only going to build on that this year. He has... The fastballs in this rotation are disgusting, and he is not just so reliant on... Why I think he's so good already is he's not coming up as, like... His fastball is really good. It's his best pitch, his fastball and slider. But his curveball and changeup weren't that bad, and he throws a cutter as well. He throws enough pitches coming up as a rookie where it's like, I think he's only going to improve those pitches, and his fastball slider is already so good. I can only see him improving... and then James Paxton and Gavin Stone. James Paxton, I think, again, if he's healthy, I think he's going to be a solid 4 or 5 starter for them. It's just a matter of keeping him healthy. And then Gavin Stone, who was a rookie, one of their like 3 rookie pitchers that came up last year and looked like, I don't know. You saw the changeup. He has potentially one of the best changeups in the league. So hopefully with a good defense of Mookie Betts at shortstop behind him this year, he will generate lots of soft contact and ground balls with that changeup. But he was really good in the second half, or a lot better, I should say, in the second half than the first half. I think there were market improvements there. And I think he just kind of needs to bring the fastball or like four-seam or sinker or slider. I think he needs the four-seam with the changeup to work a little bit better, and the slider. I don't know about the sinker for him, but I think there's reason to believe that he will improve this year, and he's going to have not as much pressure on him entering the year as a 5 starter with other better pitchers in front of him. And then in terms of the other staff right now, Walker Buehler had Tommy John in 2022, didn't pitch at all last year. Tony Gonsolin also had Tommy John last year. Clayton Kershaw had shoulder surgery over the offseason. Dustin May had flexor tendon surgery midway through the year last year. Emmett Sheehan right now is just kind of hurt. He had general soreness, which that could mean any number of possible outcomes, but I think they're probably looking to get Buehler back. I don't know about opening day. I don't think opening day, but maybe in April or May. Fangraphs thinks he'll throw 135 innings this year, which would be around probably May-ish, May time for him. And that would be huge because I think that just lessens the load on what they'd expect from Gavin Stone this year. And in an event where Tyler Glasnow gets hurt again or James Paxton gets hurt again like they have the past few years, you hope to get Buehler back enough to patch up the rotation. By May, you hope to get him back. I think, I don't know what the prognosis is on Kershaw, like all-star break maybe. Like he just had shoulder surgery and he was clearly hurt last year for a lot of the year, especially when he gave up 100 runs to the D-backs in game one of that series that basically lost them the series and all the momentum. He was definitely hurt and he got surgery in the offseason, which like clearly, yes, he was hurt. And then Dustin May, I don't know if we're going to see him at all this year. I'd probably say no. When was this? July surgery on the flexor tendon in his throwing arm. Yeah, I don't think we're going to see him this year. Maybe if he comes back, the bullpen, like later in the year. But bullpen looks like a Dodgers bullpen. I mean, Evan Phillips, back of the pen, really like him with Bruster Gratterall. And Joe Kelly, Ryan Brazier, Alex Vesia, Blake Treinen. I think if there's anywhere to improve this team midway through the year, it will be the bullpen. I think Bruster had a crazy good year last year with peripherals that didn't exactly back it up. They backed up him being a really good pitcher, but not like a 1.5 ERA pitcher. I do like Evan Phillips. They have Ryan Yarbrough and Alex Vesia as left-handed options. I think Ryan Brazier was good for them to bring him back. Joe Kelly, year to year, I don't know what Joe Kelly's going to do. He's also like 36 along with Ryan Brazier. Those are like absolute wild cards for them just because it's a relief pitcher. And year to year, it's so hard to predict. And like Joe Kelly had a pretty Joe Kelly year last year. His peripherals looked a lot better than his ERA. But again, you don't know what you're going to get from him this year. Same with Ryan Brazier. Really solid year last year after a very shaky 2021 with Boston. Maybe he repeats what he did last year. He was nice. I don't know. I think if there's any room for improvement in this team, it is definitely the bullpen. But I think you'd hope Walker Buehler comes back and looks like Walker Buehler, and you can maybe just kind of shift Gavin Stone to the bullpen as a long man or six man rotation for a while. I don't know. This team, regardless, the offense is going to put up runs and the starters are really good. So I think the bullpen's going to be handing some fairly easy games to close out. And that is the freaking Dodgers. I mean, there's not much else I really have to say about this team besides they're going to be really good. And I'm even more excited about the following year because that's when Shohei theoretically will be pitching and hitting again. So we'll see. But what is their over-under? 103.5. You know what? You know what I'm going to do? I'm going to go under. I'm going to go under 103.5. I think 103.5 is very ambitious, although I could see this team winning more. I'm just going to go under because that's just an insanely high win total, even for a really good team in baseball. So I'm going to go under. I still think it's probably like 100 wins, but I'm going to go under 103.5. And then how I think this division is going to shake out, I think I'm officially going to say Dodgers in first place, D-backs in second place, Giants in third place, Padres in fourth, and Rockies in fifth. I'm going to go somewhat chalk based on the projections, but I can see it shaking out very differently in the middle of that division. But that is the NL West. Five down, one more to go. The AL East and then the Mariners preview are to follow. The AL East preview will be coming out next Friday, or this Friday, I should say. This will be on Monday. So the AL East, look out for that one. Appreciate you listening this far. We're almost through the preview episodes, and then we can get down to really just focusing on Mariners regular season baseball, which sounds frightening, I know, but we're close. We're close. And again, thank you for listening. If you've listened to all of these, very much appreciate it. And AL East is coming up. That should be a spicy one. And look out for that Friday. Thank you for listening again. Have a good rest of the week. Goodbye.